And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. I mean, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. That would be Alabama. From way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. Hey, by the way, even though we cover all that kind of ground, we still have listeners elsewhere. Like I just saw that Rayson from Hawaii just tweeted in or texted in. He's listening to the show right now. Appreciate you, Rayson. Shout out to you out there in the Honolulu area. So thank you very much for what you do out there. All right, let me do this. We're going to the phones. So we're staying. I'm still on number one. I'm calling it lawfare. Number one of the triple dipper, lawfare. The idea that you're going to weaponize or go to war with the use of the legal system. That appears to be what we're dealing with. But let's talk about it from a political standpoint. And to do that, I want to bring in somebody who's been doing policy and politics around the state of Alabama for a long time, having worked for the previous Governor Riley administration, been in legislative affairs in both the corporate arena and also the chamber. And she's now the president of the Alabama Policy Institute. And that would be my friend, Stephanie Smith. Stephanie, how you doing?
Hey, Phil. I'm great.
Good.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good enough. How about that? Appreciate you making some time. You just got back from time off with the kids, I understand?
Florida road trip. And it was fun. We Tampa, Orlando, Cape Canaveral, and St. Augustine.
Good Lord. Well, so do y'all RV in it, or are you just driving?
We took two cars.
Because you got like 19 kids.
We're not really concerned about our carbon footprint, so we took two cars so that we could be somewhat comfortable. Well, but not all of my Auburn girl didn't get to go, so only the six kids.
Oh, okay, only the other six. Well, I feel certain that you're rested and refreshed after that. I feel sure.
I am. And no laundry to do at all.
Oh, none. Well, listen, stepping right back into the role, you came back just in time for the indictment of the former president of the United States.
I know. I saw it come across the wire when we were on the way home yesterday.
Wow.
And, you know, it was expected last week.
Yeah.
And then didn't happen. So I'm pretty well aware of the implications of it. The first thing that really I started thinking about, even last week when this started getting talked about, you know, in earnest, was just kind of the shift politically of where our country is with the hyper-politicization of everything and now including the politicization of the legal side.
Yeah.
It used to be that was really hands-off, and hands-off of former presidents.
It's unreal.
The precedent that's being set here is a little dangerous.
It is. The hyper-politicization was a great term. I mean, I think right now if you went out there and said, "Do you love your mother?" they would say, "Define mother." It would become a thing. You know what I mean? But
that is too true. Yes.
Well, so let me ask you this. Politically speaking, what does this do? I mean, I think right now there's a sense in my mind that the Democrats are almost like rabid, like scratching and clawing, getting anything they can, and like this is going to make something happen for them. Is it? Is this going to help if they get an indictment like this, and they're able to follow through on it?
I think it depends on your perspective, and you know, just like I know from being involved in politics for a long time, you know, looking at something political, you really have to look at it like it's an onion and see what's at the core and then all of the different layers that are on top of it, because there's kind of one school of thought is, you know, from the Democrat point of view is, okay, he'll be indicted, he'll be convicted, he'll be persona non grata, and we'll be rid of him forever, right? Then there's the other school of thought, which is the complete other side of the coin, of the I hate Trump coin, which is we'll just vilify him like we have, you know, for the past however many years, and that will make him a martyr, which will guarantee him being, you know, the Republican nominee, and then we beat him. And so I think that from the Democrat side, they see this as a win-win.
So
from the Republican side, I think it's a little different. I was just going to say, from the Republican side, it's a little different because there are a decent number of I hate Trump Republicans as well.
Yeah, well, there are. There are. Never Trumpers. They're still out there.
They're definitely still out there, and there are a lot of them in the D.C. area still there. But I also think, so I think from the Republican side, it's a little bit different because there are a certain number of never-Trumpers that are like, okay, fine, get rid of him. But then there are some that I think see what I actually think will end up happening, which is I think this energizes his campaign.
Yeah.
I think this makes him the talk. I think this makes him the focus. I think everybody else, and this sounds almost silly to say out loud, but I think it's true. I think it makes almost every other candidate look like a wimp because it's like, oh, you're not even doing anything for them to arrest you for. Like you're so milquetoast. They're not even after you. They're after me because I'm the man. You know what I'm saying? And so, and there's some validity to that.
Fighting corn pop with a chain.
the whole tough guy, you know, the whole tough guy shtick that he's had, you know, and he, you know, the street fighter, the New York street fighter mentality that he's fighting for the country and everybody else is just a politician. I think that ends up helping him in the long run.
So I'll tell you, I said yesterday briefly when the news broke, because we were towards the end of the show when the news broke, but I anticipate that Trump's going to take his own mugshot, put it on a direct mail piece for his campaign and send that sucker out and say, look at there. I think he's gonna actually use the imagery and the visual of this whole thing 100%. To his advantage.
Well, and I did hear earlier this afternoon that that his folks had made an agreement that he would not be in handcuffs. But that actually surprised me because I'm like you. I would think that he would want, you know, a photo in handcuffs, a photo, you know, the mugshot being fingerprinted. You know, all of the mistreatment that he's receiving instead of him just kind of waltzing in, you know, going on his private plane from Mar-a-Lago to New York, getting off and, you know, driving as though he is still president to turn himself in and have it all be orchestrated. I would imagine that if he's going after this as a campaign piece, that he'll release all of those things. Now, you know, the irony of this is that this is all about campaign finance, and you cannot buy this kind of publicity that they're handing it.
No, they can't. It just and I got news. What they don't recognize, or you know what, they have to recognize it. Why am I saying that? They have to recognize he's going to be allowed to do discovery on his side too, not just them. They get to take his deposition, I would assume. They get to, or at the very, not take his deposition because it's a criminal case, but they get to do discovery on their side. But he gets a chance to see everything they've got, and I guarantee you, he's going to find a way to let his attorneys say what they want to say. Now, Trump himself, you know, his attorneys are going to say, please don't talk. Please don't talk about this. Because you never know what one wrong statement can lead to. But uh-huh. Nonetheless, I do believe that he's going to wind up making hay out of it.
I agree. You know, and he's that's who he is. Love him or hate him. You know, that's who he is. And he likes to draw the fire unto himself and then deal with it. And so I actually think he had done some things, you know, pretty recently that, you know, the superhero cards. And I mean, some of the stuff that he was doing, it was just kind of odd and like, hey, you know, I'm out of the limelight. How do I get back into the limelight? And like I said, I mean, you want to talk about, you know, campaign finance. I mean, this is probably worth millions upon millions of dollars of free publicity.
Oh yeah.
For him and for his campaign, in that most people will end up, I think, agreeing that this was a wrongheaded and political kind of prosecution.
Unless they mess up his hair for the mugshot, then we got a whole new.
Well, then he won't release.
He won't release it. That's exactly right. Alvin Bragg's over there. Quick, mess up his hair. Well, I tend to agree with you. I think he's going to use this. I think he's going to wind up making hay out of it. I think it's going to benefit his campaign, galvanize his base. And, you know, I love that. I think it's hilarious what you just said, that it's almost like he can look at the other candidates and go, you're a bunch of wimps. None of y'all got indicted for anything. What's up? Well, that's
I mean, they've been
great
after
point.
Him for years. And, you know, I mean, how many times have we heard, oh, well, when he releases his taxes, then he'll be arrested. When he does this, then he'll be arrested. When he does this, then, you know. And, you know, they finally got somebody to come up with this sham kind of thing, you know, to go against him. But like I said at the beginning, the most interesting thing to me about all of this is the historical perspective.
Yeah.
you know, I mean, remember when Nixon says, well, when the president does it, it means it's not illegal. You've got the Clintons, you've got the Obamas, you've got, you know, even in recent history, you've got people, you know, who have done some things that I would term as sideways that, you know, have not been prosecuted and have not been, you know, vilified in the way that Trump has been vilified. And he's going to use that to his advantage. He's a political animal and he's a fighter. And, you know, again, love him or hate him, it doesn't really matter. That's who he is. And he's going to use this to his advantage as best he can.
Well, and on the political side, too, you and I have both been involved in campaigns. Campaign finance reporting is a royal pain, but it has to be done. You got to report what you spent money on or who you got money from. And the reports get filed. But in the broad scheme of things, that's just like a low-level thing. I mean, you look at it and go, that's what you got? He didn't fill out his forms correctly and claim a payoff to a prostitute or a porn star as, you know, some benefit to his campaign? That's what you got?
Yeah, I mean, it really honestly sounds absurd, which, again, works to his advantage. The interesting thing will be to see, and I was listening to you, earlier, the interesting thing will be to see how the other already declared candidates on the Republican primary side handle this. I did see that DeSantis came out immediately. He got some fire last week for not immediately coming out when the rumor was flying around saying that he wouldn't be a participant in this process at all as the Florida governor. He did come out with that, I think, today or yesterday. You know, kind of a hands-off statement. And then, you know, lots of different candidates and Republican elites have come out to say one thing or another. It's always interesting to see, you know, how strongly people word their statements on things like this. Coach Tuberville put out, a very strong statement. I loved what Barry Moore said.
Yeah.
Did you see that? About
out the ham sandwiches. Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm always for, you know, addressing something that is absurd with humor. So I loved that aspect of it. As far as the political fallout, specifically in the state of Alabama, I think this gains him followers instead of losing followers.
I agree. I mean, I think that right now he already had the upper hand in terms of the polling. I think this gives him more impetus. And I think right now, and he can even, by the way, I've got an article here that says that he can run while under indictment. The only way that he could be removed is if he actually got convicted. So he can run under indictment. So he can, and with the motion practice and discovery and everything else, if this thing doesn't get dismissed, he's going to be all the way through the election time before they even get this thing to court.
Absolutely, which then brings the next political question to the forefront, which is whoever he chooses as VP is even more important.
For a lot of reasons.
Whoever he chooses as VP. Yeah, there's a decent chance, you know, if this goes through, which I don't think it will, but if it goes through all the way through the process and he was somehow convicted, you know, then whoever the vice president is becomes very important very quickly.
Well, and it was already that way anyway because he's like, 78 years old, 77? You kind of think, of course, Biden didn't feel that way, but then again, Biden hadn't made a good decision about anything. He just went ahead and picked Kamala even though he's 80. Just whatever.
It's working out really well, though, Phil, don't you think?
She broke a lot of glass ceilings, so hey, there's that. All right, my friend. Well, get rested up over the weekend, get all the clothes washed, but get back into policy. We're glad you're back.
Thanks. I really appreciate it. All right. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah, sure will. We'll talk again, I'm sure. All right, have a great day.
Okay,
great weekend.
So.
That was Stephanie Smith, president of the Alabama Policy Institute. You can find out more about them and the work they do at www.alabamapolicy.org. That's alabamapolicy.org. All right, boom. Take us to the break, man. We'll take the break, come right back, and put a lid on this one, and then we're not even – Boomer, am I doing dippers today?
I don't think this
I don't
is
know
a
what's
dipper
happening.
Day. This is just a
– This is like a do-the-show-as-it-goes day is what it feels like. We're coming back at the top of the hour with Boomer and McQueen. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid and conservative and just plain right. I'm not even going to get into all my resources here. I'll tell you a couple things that I've got in front of me, though, that things that you might want to find. If you need to, you can go to our website, rightsideradio.org. Go to the live stream tab. That's where you can watch the show, listen to the show, but you can also click on the resources button at the bottom. And all of the dippers for today that we may not get to, some of them, are there with every single article that I rattle the paper for is linked. So if you want to go find a copy of something I've already talked about or send it to somebody else, there it is. All these things are up there right now. Rightsideradio.org, live stream page, click on resources. But let me tell you about a couple things that are in here. Jonathan Turley, a Fox News contributor and Georgetown law professor, wrote a really interesting piece. It came out today, but the dates on this page look a little different. But anyway, the bottom line is this. He likened what is happening with Alvin Bragg's indictment of Trump to the Frankenstein monster. And what he's basically saying is he's cobbled it together. And then he actually has a quote from the movie, it's alive! That's what this is just a Frankenstein monster of a case. This is the guy who is one of the most highbrow. Whenever he comes on and gives legal perspective, I pause and listen, because every time he speaks, I feel like I'm gaining some kind of continuing legal education. But he literally says Bragg unearthed a case from 2016 and through a series of novel steps is seeking to bring the whole thing back to life, combining parts of state and federal codes. And then it gives a great explanation from there on about all the issues he's going to have getting this done. We do have that one other report on Daily Wire that says we don't know for a fact, but right now sources are telling Daily Wire that we have what are upwards of 30 criminal charges in the grand jury indictment. Still under seal. That's the way New York law works, apparently, is the indictment is given or is rendered under seal. The grand jury voted. They voted to indict. Apparently, they've been voted to indict on multiple charges. We'll find out for sure what the charges are. I don't know for a fact that we can even determine yet what kind of a sentence, like maximum sentence, the former president could be facing. I mean, this is technically a misdemeanor charge being ramped up to a felony, as far as we know. What's the penalty here? 30 days in jail? 30 years in jail? We have no idea. So there's that. Now, there's one other piece here that I thought was super fascinating. It gets into both the political and the legal ramifications. Fox News has a piece that came out today, headline, "What Happens If Trump Is Elected President While Under Indictment? This is uncharted territory," is what it says. It says there are no constitutional restrictions keeping Trump from actually continuing his campaign and eventually moving back into the White House if he is elected while under indictment, which means the country is actually moving into unknown waters. Totally unknown. And the quotes go on to talk about in the story the fact that it's hard to imagine a sitting president would be taken into custody and sentenced to prison while serving. Would they then stay the sentencing until after he serves his term if he was reelected? I have no answer. Nobody knows, because it's all brand new territory. Andrew McCarthy, former U.S. attorney, he echoed a similar sentiment, it says in the article. He says, anyone who tells you that they know what's going to happen is either delusional or lying, McCarthy said. We've never had a situation like this. I don't think the founding fathers ever thought there could be a situation like this. I think part of the reason they designed the Electoral College was to make sure something like this didn't happen, but you know, here we are. That's what he said. And it goes on to point out that even an average criminal case in New York can take from 6 months to a year to move from indictment to trial, meaning that it could easily coincide with the 2024 elections and into the next presidency. So we are in uncharted waters, my ruffian friends. We'll just have to keep watching, waiting, talking, and we'll do that for you right here on Right Side Radio. All right, coming up next, my favorite time of the week, Boomer and McQueen. You guys stay tuned. We will be right back. We'll be right back. right-side ruffians out there.